Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplex and the art house. What's new on video and streaming, and you might also hear about some dead people we like.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Anyway, this is Film Sociology, where you'll find out what's the next cinematic marvel.
It was unbelievable!
And what's just a movie.
Shut up! My God, you have no freaking life!
Okay, here's your host and my dad, Matthew Soucy.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soucy. The show, of course, is available as a podcast, and it's also available on iTunes. And all of the shows here at WFYI.org are available, all the podcasts, I should say, are available on Spotify. Well, friends, we got through another week. Have you gone to the drive-in? Are you ready to go back to the movie theaters yet? Me neither. So we will go through. We'll go grab a pencil in just a moment, but I want to. I do have one. I know opening available on demand this week is My Spy. If you want to see Dave Bautista's turn of being kindergarten cop or any film that has an action hero teamed up with a child. It started really with Kindergarten Cop and Arnold Schwarzenegger and everybody from Dwayne Johnson, Burt Reynolds. I think the only person that never did it, and I believe it was Joe Shearer was on the show with me. I think we were discussing this particular subgenre of action film. And I think the only one who didn't do it was Charles Bronson. But everybody else has done that, and now it's Dave Bautista's turn. So anyway, My Spy is available online. Yesterday, the day before this recording, Heartland Film Festival has announced Indie Shorts 2020. So it's going to be running July 21st through the 26th. Julia Ricci, who's been on this show before, but you can go to Indie Shorts Film Festival eventive.org/welcome. You can buy your tickets there. You can go to the Heartland Film Festival website, I'm sure, as well. But 128 short films. So that is happening next month. So congratulations to those that became a part of that. Before I get to what I've watched over and I was really Criterion heavy this week for a couple reasons. One, they're great material to look at, and I'm the guy that goes through all the special features, so I wound up spending quite a bit of time with that. But earlier this year, Criterion had released Bill Forsyth's Local Hero, which is one of my all-time favorite films. If I remember correctly, it is Ed Johnson-Ott's favorite film of all time. Hi, Ed. Hope you're doing well. And with that finally being given the Criterion treatment, I wanted to do on Wednesday on social media what films you thought should get the Criterion treatment. And I had to update my list a little bit. So anyway, I went online and asked you folks on Facebook and Twitter and got a few responses. So we're going to start with that. First off, let's see. Surely Not Me at Fish Called said maybe obvious, but Moonlight. Emily Wheeler, hello, fellow film critic, Emily Wheeler, she suggests But I'm a Cheerleader. Julia Ricci, who I just name dropped, she mentioned The Apartment. Linda at Brody Rocks mentioned Das Boot. So that's pretty good. That's a pretty good list right there. Going to my Facebook account. So this was posted on Wednesday. Benjamin chimes in. That's a hard one. All of my favorites are already on the list, but I would like them to dive more into the genre of indie art films. Richard Probst, definitely Falling Down. Good timing. We'll be talking about Joel Schumacher in a little bit. It's one of my favorite films, and I'm actually surprised they haven't done it. It would also be so relevant to these times. Thank you, Richard. I remember doing a column for the Ball State Daily News of a lunch conversation between Defense and Falling Down and Travis Bickle and Taxi Driver, because I thought I was clever in college. Mike writes, I just searched the list and was shocked to discover Wizard of Oz and Gone with the Wind were both missing. Oh, timing. I'd also add Willy Wonka, The Time Machine, Somewhere in Time, 2001 Space Odyssey. It seems to me they need to add more science fiction in general. You know, Mike, I those titles, and I think the other one, I didn't get a chance to write this on Facebook or Twitter, of films that I like my list, which I'll get to in a moment, they don't have a whole lot of special features already. Now, the ones for what you mentioned already have a fairly thorough presentation as far as special features. But I understand what you're saying. But that just makes my list a little bit different. Joellen writes, do documentaries count? Of course. Watched Becoming and 13th. I think Joellen thought this was Thursday. Channing writes, John Carpenter's The Thing through the recent Arrow release party is pretty damn great. Though the recent Arrow release is pretty damn great. There you go. Mike writes, Crime Wave. Manny writes, Switchblade Sisters. Good call, Manny. I actually got to see that in the theaters in Chicago in the 90s when Quentin Tarantino's production company Rolling Thunder was putting out the genre films that he liked a great deal. Steven writes, Steven always goes deep. I love it. Their most glaring omission, the Terrence Davies trilogy. Children, Madonna and Child, and Death and Transfiguration. And his distant voices still lives. Also, Victor Jossman's The Wind, John's favorite silent movie. And why, oh why, don't they have an edition of Butchered Remains of von Stroheim's Greed? I don't know, Stephen. Thank you. Alan writes, The Long Kiss Goodbye. All right. Brian writes, I'd love to see them tackle the rest of the Kubrick catalog, but most especially Lolita. I'd also like to see them finally start producing 4K discs. Thank you, Brian. Criterion, are you getting this? Are you grabbing a pencil as well? Zachariah writes, Memories of Murder has topped my list for a long time. I'm very happy to see it'll be released soon. Gary writes, The 7% Solution with Nicholas Meyer commentary. Henry writes, The Train. Good call, Henry. Love Burt Lancaster in that. Great stunt work there, too. Tom writes, Kung Fu Hustle. Brilliant parody / homage. Frank writes, Any or all of the Wes Anderson films. I think they're getting there. And then Steven writes, Bogess and Death Takes a Holiday. The Bogess from 1939, the Death Takes a Holiday, but from 1934. Both a little flawed, but worth it. Cool. Thank you, gang. So here's my list. And I asked you guys for one. I'm going to give you five. What was probably at the top of my list already was Bruce Beresford's film Tender Mercies, with Robert Duvall, of course, winning Best Actor that year. Tess Harper, Betty Buckley, Wilfred Brimley, Ellen Barkin. Great film. Screenplay by Horton Foote, who is very near and dear to my heart. And that was the film. I always link Tender Mercies and Local Hero. I remember seeing them. I think that, yeah, they both came out in 1983. Both had a profound effect on me as a young film fan. Both introduced me, especially Tender Mercies, to the concept of less is more. And so anyway, that was at the top. But I know that Kino Lorber is putting out a proper Blu-ray release with special features in August. So I'm going to take that off the list of my five. But I am going to put in its place. There are two. I'm kind of cheating, actually. I have six. So if they have Tender Mercies, I think a collection. I have two box set ideas. So, you know, Criterion, take note. One is written by Horton Foote collection. If you go to his IMDb, if you go through his resume, he's done scripts for television performances and TV series going back to the early 1950s, including the Goodyear Playhouse, the Philco Television Playhouse, Studio One, Armchair Theater, Playhouse 90, ITV Television Playhouse. You could do all of those. I mean, I think even if you did that alone, And by the way, anything directed by Sidney Lumet for television would be cool, too. Of course, he did the screenplay for To Kill a Mockingbird, Baby the Rain Must Fall, The Chase. Now, I know Harry Sundown has a Blu-ray release because I have the Otto Preminger box set. Tomorrow, The Displaced Person, Barn Burning, of course, American Playhouse. We mentioned Tender Mercies. 1918, Trip to Bountiful, both versions, really. And there's a televised version from the 50s. On Valentine's Day, Courtship, Convicts, The Habitation of Dragons, Of Mice and Men. That's the Malkovich Sinise one from 1992. Lily Dale, Old Man, Alone. That's the film that was shown at the Heartland Film Festival. And thank you, Jeff Sparks, for letting me meet Horton Foote. He's the only celebrity I ever got tongue-tied around. I loved Horton Foote's writing so much. And I have met, I'm not going to name drop, but I've met a lot of people, not all of them were guests on the show. And I was able to throw them a complimentary line of their work in one way, shape, or form. And I met this little Southern gentleman, and he extended it. Jeff introduced him to me, and I extended my hand, and the only thing I could blurt out was, "I love your work." So there you go. Anyway, Main Street, One Armed Man, and, of course, the remake of Trip to Bountiful from 2014, and Bessie. So anything written by Horton Foote, I think, for me would be a great collection. Another great collection, you could do anything by John Sayles. I know they did Matuan, I believe it was last year or earlier this year. Anytime you can get your hands on the films of John Sayles, I guess if I had to pick two at the top, Eight Men Out and Lone Star. But really, that whole collection of his films would be a great collection. Okay, so here are those are two collections. Here are four individual titles I would love to see get the Criterion treatment. Big Night, Stanley Tucci, Tony Shalhoub, great, one of the great food films of all time. And I think it's the disc is out of print, and of course Tucci co-directed the film, but it's a lovely film about food and siblings, and films about siblings have been in my mind recently. And of course the great ending and food porn. And then on top of that, you have Isabella Rossellini and Minnie Driver. So and as the flower girl, Allison Janney. So Big Night would be great. Round Midnight, the French film directed by, I hope I'm saying it right, Bertrand Travelier. This is the film that got an Academy Award nomination for Dexter Gordon, playing an American jazz musician living in Paris, I believe, in the 1950s. I was 16 when that film came out and resonated with me. 1980s Atlantic City, directed by Louis Malle with Burt Lancaster, Susan Sarandon, one of my favorite crime dramas of all time. And I know Criterion has put out Louis Malle films already. So, and I know I have the DVD of Paramount's release of Atlantic City, no features. I would love to hear more and more about this film. And finally, a film I have brought up several times over this over the history of the show, and I watched it. This is one of the graduation weekend traditions I have. 1985's comedy of Kevin Reynolds' Fandango with a then unknown Kevin Costner and a slightly more known Judd Nelson. One of my favorite road trip movies of all time, and that's still my favorite Kevin Reynolds film. You can have Waterworld. You can have Robin Hood. I'll take Fandango. I would love to get a Criterion treatment of that. So there you go. And you have an extra bonus grab a pencil portion of the show. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. I am your host, Matthew Soucy, and going through what I watched over the last week. And then we'll get to your list. And then we have a couple tributes we need to do at the end of the program. So going back, I'm going to let you know what's going on at the drive-in. I'm keeping this in. This is your pledge dollars at work. It's scatterbrained. This is what happens sometimes when you are producing and hosting. At the Tibbs drive-in, on screen one, you have My Spy and Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. You get another chance to see that on the big screen. So good choice there. Screen two, you have Becky. This is the film with Kevin James as a villain in this thriller, followed by Infamous. Screen three, you have Bad Boys for Life, which is the last film I saw in the movie theater. Not happy about that. Screen 3, you have Bad Boys for Life and Miss Juneteenth. And in Screen 4, they're going old school, Anchorman and Wayne's World, both at the Tibbs Drive-In. At the Skyline Drive-In, also going old school, The Neverending Story and The Goonies. So there'll be some folks my age happening over there. At the Starlight Drive-In in Bloomington, they're doing Zootopia and The Avengers. And I believe Monday they're just doing Zootopia, and Tuesday they're doing just The Avengers. So there you go for that. Okay. Going through what I watched recently, I've been trying to do old movies on Friday nights, especially if my daughter's out of the house. I have some husband and wife time. And I had a criterion of this and hadn't watched it in a while. But Alfred Hitchcock's Rebecca, Joan Fontaine, Laurence Olivier, one of those where the house is the character. That's Manderley. A fun gothic melodrama of a second wife syndrome and or a lover's past, which at times can be more relevant today. And a story of a hardened man who needs to be softened, and the weird housekeeper who carries a major torch for Rebecca. Just a fun romantic suspense film on a Friday night, and trying to get out, of course, dealing with the past, trying to get out of Rebecca's shadow. Excellent performances by Fontaine and Olivier. And it was a fun couple of special features include the matte paintings and the use of paintings and scale, especially for a film from 1940. And then also a fun commentary of two female scholars saying how Rebecca would how it holds up as a feminist tale, and also what it would have been like if Vivian Leigh were to lead, because that's who Laurence Olivier really, really wanted to have in Rebecca. My midnight movie last week was, I think I've mentioned, I am now completely caught up on the old Mystery Science Theater box sets, courtesy of Shout Factory. I bought a couple, and it took a month to get them in the mail, but I got them, and so I'm still working on the new. Eventually, I will get the new incarnation of Mystery Science Theater, including The Gauntlet, but volume 35. And so Saturday night, after I got done doing the house party, came home, cracked open a can, got some popcorn, and from 1960, the Columbia B movie 12 to the Moon. This is one where the International United Actors of Benetton go on a giant rocket to the moon with a dull international cast. Actually, what was fun about this film, so the history of Mystery Science Theater and my daughter. She watched a lot of them with me as a child when she was much smaller, and she referred to them as daddy movies with the funny robots. And as she got older, as your kids get older, they have their own opinions and ideas and stuff they used to watch when they were younger, not so much. So it got to a point where, and we still abide by this, she'll sit down and watch a short film, because sometimes in some cases the short film is better than the overall feature. And this is the case in this one. I caught home, and she was up, and she sat with me as we watched Design for Dreaming, a musical short film about the products of General Motors. And this was one where the singing dancing girl supposedly pops up on the satellite of love. So that was the highlight of that. There were two Criterion films that came out recently that I purchased. One I hadn't seen in quite a while. And the other one I'd never seen before. And I've mentioned before, my favorite filmmaker is Martin Scorsese. And Criterion put out the Scorsese Shorts Collection, which includes the 1974 documentary Italian American. It's basically him filming his parents. And as I was in my notes, all filmmakers wish they could film their parents like this. So you get Catherine and Charles Scorsese. You've seen them in a number of his films. Mom, most notably, as Joe Pesci's mother in Goodfellas. Dad is also one that puts a bullet in Joe Pesci's head. There's a little fun family twist there. But you get them talking individually. You get to see her making her spaghetti sauce. And so it's about 45 minutes, and it's entertaining watching them tell stories about living together, about growing up. And you see a little bit of Scorsese as he's watching this. And the one that made me laugh out loud, and I haven't laughed this hard in a while, but in the closing credits is the recipe for the sauce that Catherine Scorsese is making. And my daughter and I, for Father's Day, made spaghetti sauce, sort of from scratch. Anyway, we looked at that, and I said we should really try that. So anyway, so Italian American, this for me is the best of the lot. You also have the 1978 short film American Boy, which is a profile, basically an interview and stories told by actor Stephen Prince. This was the guy who was the gun salesman and taxi driver. And it's done at George Mamoli's house, another 70s that guy. He was in he was the bar owner, gets into the pool hall owner, I should say, that gets in a fight in Mean Streets. But basically, it's Stephen telling stories and very some entertaining and some a little horrifying. And he's not afraid to talk about his past issues with addiction. He also tells a story which I didn't realize. He tells a story of having to give somebody an adrenaline shot after ODing. This is where Tarantino got that idea for Pulp Fiction. So anyway, American Boy was also very good. His short film, student film from 1967, I believe it was a student film, The Big Shave, which talks of, it's his war anti-war statement and a bloody short film. From 1964, It's Not Just You, Murray, which was, this was an NYU production. And it was apparently financed, it was the Edward L. Kingsley Filmmaker Award for 1964. And there's actually a fun moment where it's a guy's rise to power, and there's a police raid scene that is shot very reminiscent to the fight scene in Mean Streets, where the camera is traveling, following the fighters, and in this case, the police and the suspects. But it's a precursor to the Mean Streets. So I believe it's described as mixing the Roaring Twenties, if the film The Roaring Twenties was shot by Fellini. And in 1963's What's a Nice Girl Like You Doing in a Place Like This, about a writer who's obsessed with a photo that he purchased. So, yeah, this was a really, really fun collection. And some of the other features on it include a 1970 radio interview with Scorsese about a film series that was done in New York. The Safdie brothers and Ari Aster talking about the short films, because at that time, all they could do was find it on YouTube. So that was a lot of fun. And then I revisited the 1970 John Cassavetes comedy Husbands. Ben Gazzara, Peter Falk, John Cassavetes. He listed it as a comedy about life and death and freedom. And it's what happens when a tight group of friends, and what happens when a group, one of the group members dies. And we have middle-aged men who are slapped in the face with reality and their own mortality. And basically the John, Ben, and Peter characters go on a huge bender that starts in New York and winds up in London. And the thing about the Cassavetes films, just a reminder, it sounds improvised. It isn't. They rehearse it, they improvise in rehearsal, and then John writes it down, and you get the finished product. I remember seeing Husbands in my 20s and not quite getting all of it. I thought it was a male road trip film. It's not Fandango. It's not Sideways by any stretch of the imagination. It's at times hard to watch. And there's also a history with the film and Columbia Pictures. This is the film that Cassavetes made after the success of Faces. And the story goes, he had made a almost 3-hour cut of the film, had a test audience of 100 people. 99 people loved it. The one person who did not like it at all was John Cassavetes. And he spent almost a year re-editing it. And the final product is, in this case, the 2-hour and 20-minute version. I believe Columbia put out a slightly shorter version when it was initially released. But there's a couple of really uncomfortable moments early on in the film. One is a famous sing-along scene in a bar with three guys and some bar patrons. And this is one that is known as the scene that drove Columbia crazy. And yeah, for me, as well as the follow-up scene where Falk is getting sick in a bathroom, which apparently he had never experienced vomiting in film until Husbands. I thought it could have been shorter. I don't think he needed to cut it, but I think the point of Cassavetes is pushing it to the brink. We get that with the section in London where they're gambling. We get that when they get girls up to their hotel rooms, and you get three individual results of what happens when these husbands bring girls into their rooms. My buddy Steven, who is a great contributor during the pandemic, is totally fine with everything about the film. It could have been 20 minutes shorter for my taste, but I understand what John was going through, was doing. So there you go. But I think also the fact that I'm 50, my best friend from high school died earlier this year. I have a relative that is not doing well health-wise, and it really resonated with me in a different way, and that's what film is supposed to do. So it knocked me for a loop at this particular time. This is when I believe I watched Bob's Burgers afterwards to cleanse my palate. But going through my notes, Columbia did take it away from him and cut out 20 minutes of it. But this is more than just a male bonding film. It's about mortality and identity. And it's three great performances from Cassavetes, Falk, and Gazzara. So the other thing that's on this, and there's a couple of bonus features. The most famous feature, I think, on here is the appearance of Gazzara, Cassavetes, and Falk on the Dick Cavett Show. It was originally scheduled. I think Cavett thought they were coming on to promote the film, and word had it that they were drinking backstage and wouldn't really answer any direct questions. And it is called by many the worst Dick Cavett Show episode ever. But watching the film and seeing what they're going through, it seemed like the three guys, instead of doing your every other standard show business interview about the film, you know, especially, you know, it's what talk shows, late night talk shows are now. But I think not necessarily in character, but in the spirit of their characters from Husbands. And that said more, I think, than just Cassavetes and Falk and Gazzara giving straight answers about what the film is about. They wind up answering it a little bit, but the almost 45 minutes of these guys giggling and falling out of their chairs and not answering questions directly, and in some cases mildly harassing Dick Cavett, kind of like they do with the bar patrons in the bar scene. But anyway, so it's out there. It's something to experience. It's a little bit of performance art. So anyway, those were two of the big titles I got to watch this week. For Father's Day, my lovely family, they were very patient. As I said, my daughter and I made spaghetti sauce, more than just opening a can, actually crushing tomatoes and doing all that. And then we watched The Godfather. And truth be told, Emma had a very long day and fell asleep. And that's not the first time it has happened, and it won't be the last. But I have a Godfather trilogy on Blu-ray and finally got to crack that open. And then last night I watched Godfather 2 because my wife and daughter were busy with stuff. So I sat down, hopefully going to get through 3, then the commentaries, then the fourth disc with special features. I'll hopefully get through that next week, during the next week. And yes, because of the death of Joel Schumacher, I had my family watch Car Wash, which was one of his first screenplays. We'll get to his resume in a little bit. And then going through the stuff that I owned, I revisited A Time to Kill. So there was that period where he was kind of crisscrossing between Batman movies and films based on the novels of John Grisham. And the other one, of course, being The Client. This one, I remember seeing it in the theater with my buddy Laura Jansen. Hey, Laura. You know, you forget about the deep, deep cast in this. Sandra Bullock. This was the film that made Matthew McConaughey a star in the blockbuster sense. Samuel L. Jackson. Charles Dutton was in this. But you got, you know, two generations of Sutherlands. Brenda Fricker, John Deal, Nikki Catt, Patrick McGoohan as the judge. Kevin Spacey, when it was okay to say stuff about Kevin Spacey, in full smarmy Spacey mode. I believe this is the film he did after winning the Academy Award for The Usual Suspects. Oliver Platt, John Seneca, Anthony Heald, Kurtwood Smith, Octavia Spencer's first film, M. Emmett Walsh. Oh, and Ashley Judd. And I should also mention one of the stars of this film, Vaseline, because especially if you see McConaughey and especially Judd when it's supposed to be a hot summer night in Mississippi and you see them glistening with sweat, but it's actually Vaseline. This was the film. There was a brief period in the 90s, and it carried with Pitt longer. If you remember, A River Runs Through It, because it was Brad Pitt and it was directed by Robert Redford, and that was where, he's the second coming. Brad Pitt was the second coming of Robert Redford. In this film, I remember between the Southern charm and the vulnerability and the jeans dress shirt combination that McConaughey was kind of being pushed as the next Paul Newman. And that didn't happen. In fact, Matthew McConaughey is his own brand now and has been that way ever since. So, by the way, close your eyes. Now imagine she's white. There you go. So, yeah, revisited a popcorn film if there ever was one. And that's what Joel Schumacher gave us. When he died earlier this week at the age of 80, it was fun to see people on social media giving this guy praise. And I'm one of them that said, well, I didn't like all of his work, or I didn't like any of his work. So just going to revisit some of this. I've literally grown up watching his work. His first screenplay credit was Sparkle, the original Sparkle, obviously from 1976. I wrote about this when Aretha Franklin died for the Film Yap, if you want to go check that out. Car Wash, that's what I was mentioning. I love Car Wash unabashedly. It is a kind of urban Altman film done by Universal about a day in the life of a car wash in downtown Los Angeles. And this was one of the first films I ever recorded off our giant top-loading Betamax, one that I watched constantly as a kid. And so my family got to experience it. There's a lot of familiar faces in it, everybody from Ivan Dixon, Bill Duke, Melanie Mayron, Professor Irwin Corey, Garrett Morris, just a slew of people. And this was I think this was my first experience. Antonio Fargas. I should never forget Antonio Fargas in this film, because the network edition, almost all of his moments are taken out. In fact, I think they're all taken out. You see him basically in the background, and that's a shame. I know it was replaced with scenes that were never in the theatrical production of the hot dog stand next door run by Brooke Adams and Danny DeVito. Don't need that. But this was, I think, my first experience with an ensemble film. And from then on, seeing these actors pop up in other things, it happened a couple years later with me and Animal House. But seeing somebody like Pepe Serna wind up in one scene in Fandango, and seeing Antonio Fargas in other things, and seeing Bill Duke go on as an actor and a director. So, I enjoy Car Wash, and Shout Factory did a nice treatment of Car Wash on Blu-ray. He did the screenplay for The Wiz, one of his first films as a director, the Lily Tomlin film The Incredible Shrinking Woman from 1981. I remember seeing that in the theater. DC Cab, kind of another attempt of doing Car Wash only with cab drivers, and another odd group of people that ranging from Gary Busey to Mr. T. St. Elmo's Fire. Someday I'll revisit this. I was not a fan of St. Elmo's Fire when I was 15, and I was kind of the target audience. 20-somethings finding out life is difficult. Boo-hoo. The Lost Boys. All right. I know a lot of people love The Lost Boys. I know a lot of people love to throw The Lost Boys at especially the Twilight crowd. That came out in 1987. I've never seen The Lost Boys from start to finish. And anybody who exclaims and is responding, it happens. It happens to the best of us. And for this, I can throw 10 titles at you of films you haven't seen. So it happens. So someday I'll visit it. But I think at that time I was 17 and I didn't need sparkly, glossy vampires then. So We'll see. The romantic comedy Cousins with Ted Danson and Isabella Rossellini. Flatliners from 1990. Dying Young with a young Julia Roberts from 1991. Falling Down, I've mentioned. Revisit that today and check that out. Of course, The Client, really fun bantering between Susan Sarandon and Tommy Lee Jones. Okay, Batman Forever and Batman and Robin. I know that there has become a bit of a turn about these two films, and I believe one of my colleagues at the IFJA said that Arnold Schwarzenegger's greatest contribution to cinema is his performance as Mr. Freeze in Batman and Robin. I'm not on that. I know, and I know folks that love the campy stuff and maybe were not fans of Tim Burton's work or Christopher Nolan's work, go back to that. I don't need a two-hour, $100 million campy Batman show. I have the series from the 60s, so I didn't need to go back to this. And although, you get to see Schwarzenegger choose some scenery and Uma Thurman choose some scenery, but, Clooney and Val Kilmer... Clooney still apologizes for it, but I know there are Batman and Robin and Batman Forever apologists out there. I'm not one of them. Time to Kill, I've already mentioned. 8mm. I know some folks like this. You should really watch Hardcore. It's a better film about having to go down the seedy, seedy world of porn and snuff. Flawless. I remember for the performances of Robert De Niro and Philip Seymour Hoffman. And that's about it. Tigerland I did like, and that introduced a lot of people to Colin Farrell. Bad Company, this is the one with Chris Rock and Anthony Hopkins. I also enjoyed Phone Booth. I love the fact that Joel Schumacher made a Larry Cohen film. It's a Larry Cohen script. I enjoyed Colin Farrell's obnoxious New York accent, and I don't have a problem with the vocal tracks of Kiefer Sutherland. I just don't. Deal with it. Veronica Guerin from 2003 with Cate Blanchett and Phantom of the Opera. Hi, Kayla. Moving on, the Jim Carrey thriller, the number 23. Then you got Blood Creek, 12. And then the home invasion thriller, Trespass, with Nicole Kidman and Nicolas Cage. And then he also did a couple episodes of House of Cards. So, some I enjoyed, others not so much. But I'm hopefully going to revisit a couple of these over the summer. So we'll see. But salute to Joel Schumacher. I mean, to go from costume design, I believe he was a costume designer, to a screenwriter, to a director. So he made an impact, and there's something to be said about that. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. All right, folks, grab a pencil. But first, before you grab a pencil, I don't want this to get overshadowed. I think the death of Joel Schumacher ran over... a guy who also passed away last week, but had a couple things of note that you've probably seen. His name is Alan Metter, and he did a series of music videos before doing a TV movie called The Winds of Whoopi. But he directed two films that folks of my generation know fairly well. 1985's Girls Just Want to Have Fun. Remember the dance movie with Sarah Jessica Parker and Helen Hunt? Yeah, he made that. And then his follow-up to that, the Rodney Dangerfield comedy Back to School from 1986. And then he made Moving with Richard Pryor, Cold Dog Soup, and Police Academy Mission to Moscow. So nobody's perfect. But he's got a cult favorite and an 80s blockbuster with Rodney Dangerfield. But he did three music videos for Olivia Newton-John. Deeper Than the Night, Totally Hot, and A Little More Love. And now, whenever I hear that song, I think of Julianne Moore singing that song in the car at the beginning of Gloria Bell. That was it. So, there's that. So thank you, Alan Metter. All right, now, this time for sure, grab your pencils. Let's see what you've been watching. Going to Twitter, at Chewy Walrus. Since last Thursday, getting into some Walter Hill and watching all the Mission Impossible films, among other things. So, let's see. The Warriors, The Long Riders, Southern Comfort, The Straight Story, The Player, Mission Impossible, Mission Impossible 2, Mission Impossible 3, Monsters University, Small Fry, Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol, Rogue Nation, and Fallout. Thank you there. Let's see. I think that's... Yep. So that's on Twitter. Going over to my email, of course, starting with Eric, who sends me this. First time viewing 1959's Gidget, which he dubbed as good. And I have a weird spot for the beach movies, especially those that aren't always Frankie and Annette. So Sandra Dee, Cliff Robertson as the Big Kahuna, James Darren as Moondoggy. Obviously, the best of the Gidget films, of course. And yeah, it dawned a miniseries, or not a miniseries, but a series with Sally Field in the 60s. Also, he dubbed good Witchfinder General from 1968. I've talked about that film earlier this year. One of the best performances out of Vincent Price. His reviewings, rewatchings of Farewell, My Lovely from 1975, the third film version of Raymond Chandler's novel. This is the one with Robert Mitchum as Philip Marlowe, dubbed it good. And then Murder, My Sweet, the excellence in noir from 1944, which I also talked about earlier this year with Philip Marlowe, played by Dick Powell. And then 1986's, as he dubbed it, a great American classic, Platoon. So good stuff there, Eric. Thank you. All right, going to Facebook, going to last week, because it happens. Allison writes, Odd Thomas. It was odd, and I loved it. Beverly writes, Rocket Man and Mommy Dearest. Oh, boy. Okay, Joe Ellen writes, Doc's Becoming and 13th. Sam Watermeyer, who's been on the show, I revisited Bound. What a stunning debut film. Everything about it is so cool, from the sleek neo-noir aesthetic to the tight structure and powerful performances. In terms of new stuff, I watched You Should Have Left, another fun haunted house movie with Kevin Bacon and David Koepp, A Stir of Echoes reunion. That's right. David writes, Man on Fire. Stephen writes, Father and Son. That's Silk Grooves. I hope I'm saying that right. Father and Son, and his more recent Francophonia, and a 1917 Edison film version of Robert Louis Stevenson's Kidnapped. Thank you, Stephen. Devin writes, The Perks of Being a Wallflower, The Simpsons Movie, The Color of Friendship, and Miracle in Lane 2. Taylor writes, Io, Laura, and Sherlock Holmes' Game of Shadows. Catherine writes, Iron Man 3. Mary writes, Misery, They, Hard Day's Night, and Saw. Corey writes, Death by Potato. It was a lower budget film made by a 19-year-old and one of the funniest films I've seen in a while. Joe Shearer writes, Nightmare, 7500, Star Trek Beyond, Demon Wind, Island of the Fishmen, Savage Streets, The Exorcist, The Silence of the Lambs, these last two with my daughter, Disclosure from 2020, Final Exam, Athlete A, Black Betty of the Tarantula. Oh, Black Belly of the Tarantula. Adrian writes, The Two Popes and Trumbo. First time for each. Love them. Jenny writes, What About Bob? Kathy writes, The Five Bloods. Judy writes, Knives Out. I have to say, I am loving Don Johnson in his third act here and roles he plays in movies here and there. He's such a doofus in this film. Plummer is amazing, just riveting as always. And you mentioned Don Johnson. I will mention my buddy Tracy Forner, who's been on the show, and he is hoping, as do I, that this will eventually lead to Don Johnson getting his version of an Academy Award nomination for something like Boogie Nights. Hopefully they get the Burt Reynolds treatment. So Darren writes, A Clockwork Orange and Scoob. Now there's a double bill. John writes, Rocket Man and rewatched Knives Out. Mark Dubeck, who's been on this show, A Few Good Men and Girl in the Spider's Web, and Jaws 2. David writes, The Interview, Troop Zero, both great movies. Emma and I are still telling people to be sweet because of Troop Zero, so thank you, Allison Janney. Diana writes, The Mandela Effect, or do I think I just watched it? Christine, Cargo, and Uncut Gems. Lisa writes, Portrait of a Lady and Simon Birch. Of course, Brian Hart's chiming in. Portrait of a Lady has such a gorgeous musical score. Thanks for reminding me of it. See, this is why I do this, that it reminds you of things, and you'll hopefully watch stuff. Abby writes, Nothing good. I'm looking for good movies. Love this weekly list. Thank you, Abby. That's why we do this. Another Abby writes, when they see us, the show must go on, and the Queen plus Adam Lambert story. Jeff writes, once upon a time in Mexico, The Dirt, the Apollo documentary, Lady Bird, and John Wick. Joshua writes, just mercy. Frankie writes, Jurassic Park and Jaws at the drive-in. Oh, lucky you. And Goodfellas. Brian Hartz chimes in, I really wanted to go to that double feature, but BB's just a touch too young for Jaws. I'm so happy you made it. Brian, I'm with you. I was 5 when I saw Jaws, and I didn't think I probably wasn't ready for it, but look what it created. Your host. Chris writes, The Five Bloods and Margaret. Chris, I hope that's the director's cut of fun history on the history of that movie from Kenneth Lonergan. I have that one on Blu-ray as well. Eric writes, Tucker and Dale versus Evil, Black Panther, Just Mercy, Zombieland, Double Tap. Susanna writes, 365 days. Well, at least 30 minutes of it. Evan writes, The Cat in the Hat. Evan, stop showing. I'll call CPS if you keep showing your kids stuff like that. Jeff writes, Detroit Rock City, The Jerk, and the internal classic, Get 'em to the Greek. Okay. Daniel writes, Johnny O'Clock, The Man Who Came to Dinner, The Bodyguard, Thoroughly Modern Millie, The Preston Sturges, Unfaithfully Yours, the original one, The Girl Most Likely, one with Stocker Channing, Go West Young Man, The Initiation of Sarah, Diamond Horseshoe, Volver, Platinum Blonde, Pat and Mike, No Place to Hide, 9, Mae West, Dirty Blonde, that's on PBS, folks, that's the new documentary on PBS, check that out, Vivian Westwood herself, The Palm Beach Story, and Elle. Kathy writes, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, and the Adrian Lyne version of Lolita. Brian Hartz chimes in, both are excellent, but comparing the two, you hardly knew they were adapting the same book. Ron writes, Our Man Flint. Doug writes, The Five Bloods, Walk the Line, and Ray. Julia writes, Terra Firma, excellent film. Solo, Rogue One, and then working our way through all the series in their proper order. Julia, this is Dr. Sosi calling. Hope it's going well. Hang in there. Lou writes, Crawl and Small Island. Hi, Lou Harry. Patrick writes, 13th, the documentary that's on Netflix. Molly writes, The Black Coat's Daughter. Lila writes, Blow the Man Down. Lauren writes, Nausicaa in the Valley of the Winds and Little Shop of Horrors. William writes, Step Brothers. John writes, Blow Up. Danielle writes, in all caps, how did I just now get the pun of your show title, OMG? And I said, don't worry, Danielle. There are still lifelong Hoosiers that haven't figured out Sammy Terry. Nobody on this thread or listening to this show, of course. David writes, Just Mercy and Jaws in the theater. Congrats, David. You got to revisit me at age 5. Andra Faye writes, The Five Bloods, Can You Ever Forgive Me, and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Jesse writes, Charade, Knives Out, and Troop Zero. Susan writes, Star Trek, the Chris Pine one, but I watched the Star Trek marathons on Wednesday night, that show's episodes from all the series. Robert writes, Revisited 2001, A Space Odyssey. James writes, Desaad from 1969. Kane writes, Knives Out, Spy, Call of the Wild, Bloodshot, and Black Panther. Melissa writes, Coherence. Steve writes, this is fun. Steve writes, I've been introducing my kids, ages 15 and 12, to Alfred Hitchcock over the past few weeks. We've watched North by Northwest, they really liked it, The Birds, a little freaked out by that one, and Strangers on a Train, really freaked out by that one. Next up will be To Catch a Thief and Rear Window, but I think I'll hold off on Vertigo and Psycho for a while. Congratulations, Steve. Very cool stuff. I have told Emma on more than one occasion, and she knows it, that I need to show her more Hitchcock. So congratulations. Bob Bloom, our very own Bob Bloom, writes Dark Waters and Destry Rides Again. Brian writes The Hustle. Not The Hustler, as I misread it at first. The Hustle, The Intruder, Boogie Nights, and Rambo Last Blood. And then so he chimed in, I know, not a great movie week. Not necessarily, Brian, so long as you enjoyed it. And you picked Boogie Nights. So, I'm supposed to tell this story. I love Boogie Nights. I dragged Mrs. Soci to an opening weekend, and it was so crowded that I think we were up fairly close, not the first row, but probably three or four rows in. So that's one that has you overwhelmed. But I promised Brian I would tell the story. So I got to interview singer and guitar player Elvin Bishop years and years ago for Nuvo. I remember Lynn was directing at Brown County Playhouse, so she had an apartment in Bloomington, and I did it in the apartment while taking care of a very, very tiny Emma Soci. And Elvin was coming to town. I believe he was playing the Noodle. So I'm doing the standard questions about his career and blues. And near the end, I asked him about the use of his song Fooled Around and Fell in Love, because it's used in Summer of Sam. It's really used in Boogie Nights. And at the time, so this is probably 2002, I think he knew that it was in the movie, but he had not seen the movie. And so there was that. And then about a year later, I saw him at the Chicago Blues Festival, reminded him of our conversation. And he said, I've seen the movie since then. And he kind of chuckled and then said, well, the check's clear. So he's getting royalties for that. So very cool. But yes, thank you, Elvin Bishop. And thank you, Paul Thomas Anderson. Every time I hear Fooled Around and Fell in Love. And by the way, rock radio, play the full version. Don't need the edited version. Oldies radio, you too. You have it. Hopefully your audience has attention spans. If you're playing, I'm sorry, on a rant. If you're playing Freebird and Stairway to Heaven and you can't play the full album version of Fooled Around and Fell in Love, as well as a lot of other cuts, you know what they are. Anyway, sorry, off my mahogany soapbox. Back to the list. Cassandra writes Jumanji 2 with Dwayne Johnson. Jackie writes Booksmart, Ford versus Ferrari, Charlie's Angels. I don't know which one. So, Ad Astra and Willow. Patty writes Battle of the Sexes from 1959, The Card from 1952, and The Spy in Black. Teresa writes The Sweetest Thing, Hidden Figures, Casablanca. Jed writes, watch one of my all-time favorites, House on Haunted Hill, the Vincent Price one, of course. Jamie writes, I rewatched Brave for its 8th anniversary. I love Merida. Merida, sorry. I pardon my Scottish. Cameron writes, Throne of Blood and Warrior. And it was his first time watching Throne of Blood. Congratulations, Cameron. Nick writes, Backdraft. Zia, hey, how you doing? She writes Chronicles of Narnia and Prince Caspian. Very good. Scott writes Bowfinger. Molly writes Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, Logan Lucky, Dave, and Keeping Mum. Tony writes Kill Bill Volume 1, Horror Hotel, and Parasite. Craig writes The Iceman Cometh with Lee Marvin. I own that one as well. Great film version of the play. And one of the best things Lee Marvin's ever done. Moveen writes, In a Lonely Place with Humphrey Bogart and Gloria Graham, a black and white classic directed by Nicholas Ray. Yes, I have that on Blu-ray as well. Linda writes, Motherless Brooklyn. Chad writes, The Goonies. Cassie writes, Knives Out. Joe writes, Once Upon a Time in Mexico, Cool Hand Luke, The Unsinkable Molly Brown, The Prince and the Pauper, and The Enemy Below. Jennifer writes, I watched Troop Zero. It gave in to pressure of Amazon Prime ads. It wasn't bad at all. Carrie writes, Valmont, really strange with Colin Firth and Annette Bening. And then I told her, you now have to visit Dangerous Liaisons. Britt writes, slow movie week in the Stein household this week. Oz, the Great and Powerful, I Am Not Your Negro, Malcolm X, and Django Unchained. Okay. While I'm on this list, my friend Johnny Iguana sent me a really long list of films. I think he sent me an email of this, kind of like what Eric does, but makes Eric's look like a pamphlet. So, Johnny, I appreciate the email. I'm going to I will look at it again. But Johnny Iguana, while I'm in the shameless plugging department, Johnny Iguana, fine piano player from Chicago, has a band called the Claudettes, and they have a brand new album out. It is called High Times in the Dark, a really fun, it's an indescribable, very cool album. It's on 40 Below Records. There's blues, there's jazz, there's R&B, there's cabaret. It's a wonderful mixture of genres and styles. So you should pick up the Claudettes new release. And you can go to theclaudettesmusic.com for all their information. I'm happy to have seen them at the Jazz Kitchen a couple of times. But yeah, Johnny Iguana's film journal is great. All right. Oh my gosh, it's huge. But he breaks it down for me in categories of film noir, vintage dark comedy, drama, biopic, war and history, action, adventure, crime drama, thriller, suspense, mystery, ghost, sci-fi adventure, documentary, quasi-documentary, horror, monster, horror comedy, B-movie chiller, comedy, dark comedy, western, Japanese horror, ghost story, thriller, Japanese drama, Japanese comedy. Now I sound like I'm in Hamlet. Chinese drama / comedy, French, Finnish, Swedish, Italian, Spanish, Mexican, German, Canadian, and Czech. Johnny, thank you so much for this, man. This is, wow, it's a lot again. So I'll have to cherry pick through those maybe and throw out a few titles I haven't heard yet. But yeah, go check out the Claudettes and their new album, High Times in the Dark, on 40 Below Records, and go to theclaudettesmusic.com. So that was fun. Thank you, Johnny. Okay, back to the list. Martin writes, Wes Anderson's The Royal Tenenbaums for the umpteenth time. Martin, there's nothing wrong with that. As I said every week since the pandemic, I hope folks are going on a balance of seeing stuff for the first time or films that are new or new to you and films that you rely on. That's okay. Howell writes, Knives Out. JJ writes, been behind on movies. The Report, The Five Bloods, The Day Trippers, Seaburg, Handmaiden, and Hotel Artemis. No need to be behind, JJ. Life happens sometimes. Charity writes, Batman The Dark Knight Returns, part of the DC Universe animated original movie series. John writes, Knives Out. Gary writes, Hell Up in Harlem and The Deserter. Janet writes, Last night I found a Pam Grier marathon on cable. I was able to watch Foxy Brown, Coffee, and Friday Foster. I also rewatched Rollerball, the original, Doubt, and Casino. I like rewatching the old movies. Me too, Janet. Beverly writes The Maltese Falcon. Kevin writes Murder on the Orient Express, all three, 74, 2001, 2017. 1934 was lost. The Healer, The Art of Racing in the Rain, The Secret Lives of Bees, and Fried Green Tomatoes. Andrea writes LA 92 and Watchmen. Chloe writes The Invisible Man, that's the most recent one, Flower, Buffaloed, Professor Marston and the Wonder Women. I rewatched Moonlight with my mom because she hadn't seen it, and I'm planning on doing Do the Right Thing for the first time tonight, and I'm very excited. Congratulations, Chloe. I also need to show Emma that one. Joni writes The Disaster Artist twice and The Artist. Also, we binged Modern Love. We thought it was marvelous. I do too, Joni. Allison writes, 222. It was just awful. Jason writes, In a Lonely Place and Humphrey Bogart. With Humphrey Bogart. Tense. Yes, it is. Marjorie writes, Great Expectations, the two-disc series. And finally, Matthew writes, I watched The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, and now the music from the Modelo beer commercial is stuck in my head. Thank you, Matthew. Ennio Morricone, never forget. And there you are, folks. That's quite a list. So I hope that you are able to keep watching movies. Again, find movies you've never seen before or that are new to you. They don't necessarily have to be new. I know they're still out there. As well as fall back on the ones that you enjoy. So, this has been fun, and I'm glad I'm able to help out some folks. And it's fun to hear folks say this is a good list or I watched a particular movie because either I mentioned it or somebody on social media mentioned it. So we're looking out for each other, friends. So I hope you're doing okay. Friends, some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. There's plenty out there. And you got the drive-in. I think that's a really good first step. So check that out. Stay healthy. Stay safe. Stay sane. And we'll get through this. Okay? Thank you for listening. We're going to end this week's show with a musical tribute to a performer. And I'm going to word this carefully because those who are in the know will know what I'm talking about. I'm going to play a tune called Surfin' Bird by the Trashmen. I know this song has been used a few times, especially, I believe, yeah, they used it in Full Metal Jacket. Whenever I hear the song, I think of John Waters' film Pink Flamingos, and a gentleman named David E. Gluck passed away earlier this week. He was listed as a performer for an infamous and uncredited role in Pink Flamingos. For me, this is the most disturbing scene in the film. It is not the end scene where Divine eats some dog excrement. No, you get to see David's work done to this song. Now, those who know John Waters and Pink Flamingos know exactly what I'm talking about. Those who don't, you've been warned. So, and you should check out Pink Flamingos as well. I think that's going to be my midnight movie this weekend. But with that in mind, here are the Trashmen and Surfin' Bird and David E. Gluck. Thank you for your sharing your talents in film, on film. You are now you've been a part of cult cinema history with one move. Anyway, until next week, take care, everybody. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan.
Oh, well, everybody's heard about the bird. Bird, bird, bird. The bird's a winner. Well, the bird, bird, bird. The bird is a winner. Well, the bird, bird, bird. Well, the bird is a winner. Well, the bird, bird, bird. The bird's a winner. Well, the bird, bird, bird. Well, the bird is a winner. Well, the bird, bird. The bird's a winner. Well, the bird, bird, bird. The bird's a winner. Well, the bird, bird, bird. Well, the bird is a winner. Well, the bird, bird. The bird's a winner. Well, don't you know about the bird? Well, everybody knows that the bird is a winner. Well, the bird.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
Okay. We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!